Buckle up, listeners, because we are going way back.
Way back.
To 1997.
Oh, wow.
Like before Y2K,
yeah.
Before smartphones,
right.
Before even that little paperclip guy in Microsoft Word.
Clippy.
And we are diving into a prediction about the future that is both exhilarating and honestly a little bit terrifying.
Okay.
The technological singularity.
And what's so fascinating about this document is it was written before the dot-com bubble even thought about bursting.
Right.
And before most people were checking their email more than like once a week.
Yeah.
And it makes some shockingly accurate predictions about technology.
It's wild. Like, we are peeking into a time capsule of futurist thinking.
Totally.
But what makes it really juicy are the things they didn't quite get right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those misses can actually tell us a lot about how our own perception of technological advancement might be a little bit skewed.
For sure.
Predicting the future.
Right.
Even armed with all the data in the world.
Yeah.
It's tough.
It's no easy feat.
Yeah.
So before we get into their predictions, let's make sure we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
What exactly is the technological singularity, at least according to our 1997 friends?
They describe it as this point in time where technological growth just goes into overdrive.
Okay.
And I don't just mean fast. I mean uncontrollably fast.
Yeah.
Reshaping civilization as we know it.
Okay.
So imagine trying to understand today's world with only the technological knowledge that you had back in the Stone Age. That's the kind of leap we're talking about.
Yeah, my brain is already starting to hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
So how did they even begin to wrap their heads around something so massive?
They used something called scientometrics.
Okay.
Which I know sounds way more complicated than it is.
Please tell me it doesn't involve, like, creepy crawly things.
No bugs here, thankfully.
Okay.
But imagine for a second you're trying to predict, say, future trends for a website.
Okay.
You wouldn't just look at today's traffic numbers, right?
Right.
You would analyze how those numbers have been growing over time.
Yeah.
Scientometrics is similar, but instead of website traffic, it's tracking the growth of knowledge.
Okay.
And trying to extrapolate where all that learning is heading.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
So what did this knowledge tracking tell them about this singularity?
One of their key takeaways was that knowledge, it doesn't grow in a straight line.
Okay.
It grows exponentially. So one groundbreaking discovery lays the foundation for a dozen more, which leads to hundreds.
Right.
It's like this ripple effect, but instead of water, it's information exploding outwards.
And that was crucial for them because
it's helped explain why tech seemed to be accelerating at such a breakneck pace.
Yeah.
Because we all kind of know technology is improving fast.
Sure.
But grasping just how exponential that growth is.
Yeah, no.
That's a whole other ballgame.
It's like the difference between jogging and like launching yourself out of a cannon.
Exactly.
Both are forms of movement,
right.
But the scale's totally different.
You got it. Huh. And here's another thing that kind of blew my mind. They found that even huge world-altering events like wars,
okay,
don't really put a dent in this exponential growth.
Wow.
They might shift the focus, sure.
Okay.
But the upward trend, unstoppable.
Wars, despite all of their devastation, are just speed bumps on the road to the singularity.
It appears so.
That's both sobering and kind of amazing.
Yeah.
What else did these 1997 futurists have to say?
Well, they highlighted this super interesting pattern, the ratio of like big groundbreaking discoveries to your average research pretty much stays constant over time.
Yeah.
Meaning, as we get more researchers, more minds working on these problems, we should expect even more of those aha moments that push us closer and closer to the singularity.
More brain power, more breakthroughs.
Exactly.
Makes sense to me. So they've got this framework for understanding how fast knowledge is growing.
Right.
But what about the specifics? Did they name any technologies that they thought were going to be big players in this whole singularity thing?
Oh, absolutely. And keep in mind, this is 1997.
Right.
We're talking pre-smartphones, pre-social media, even pre-widespread use of the internet as we know it.
Okay, so put yourself in their shoes for a second.
Right.
What's on the horizon that's got you excited or maybe a little bit terrified?
They pointed to fields like chip technology, software development, supercomputers, even things like artificial intelligence and nanotechnology.
Okay, so some things never change, right?
Right.
Those all still sound pretty cutting edge even today. But back then,
mm-hmm.
I bet those fields felt like the Wild West of tech.
Totally. And what's really striking is that they emphasized how all these fields were exploding exponentially, often blowing past even the wildest predictions of the experts at the time.
Okay, details, please.
Yeah.
What kind of predictions were we talking about here? Paint me a picture of the future as seen from 1997.
Let's start with Moore's Law. That whole processing power doubles every 2 years thing.
Right.
Even back then, they knew it was a big deal. They were talking about billion transistor chips by the early 2010s, which at the time must have sounded like pure science fiction.
Could you imagine being the folks at Intel back then? We got all this processing power coming down the pipeline, but what are we even going to do with it all? It boggles the mind. Did they get into specifics about any of the other fields?
Oh, yeah. Supercomputers, for example, they were marveling at how fast these things were evolving, talking about how the power of those room-sized behemoths would soon be available in our homes, which, spoiler alert, is exactly what happened.
It's funny, isn't it? We take it for granted now, having that much power at our fingertips. But
Yeah.
back then, it must have seemed like, singular.
Totally. And they didn't just stop at supercomputers. They also highlighted this group called the Brain Builder Group, led by a guy named Hugo de Garis. They were literally trying to build an artificial brain with 1 billion simulated neurons by 2001.
Hold up, they were trying to build an artificial brain back when I was still rocking a dial-up modem. That seems ambitious, to say the least. Did they actually pull it off?
Well, not quite on that timeline, but here's the kicker. That goal of a billion neuron artificial brain was achieved just a couple decades later than they predicted. So even when they were off, they were still kind of right about where things were headed.
That's kind of mind-blowing when you think about it. Okay, so we've got super powerful computers. We're on the verge of artificial brains. What else did they see coming down the pipeline?
Nanotechnology. Even back then, they recognized its potential, describing it as technology, not science. Meaning the biggest hurdle wasn't figuring out the theory, but actually building the tools to manipulate matter at the atomic level, which, let's be honest, still sounds pretty futuristic even today.
Right. Imagine the possibilities. Building anything you can imagine, atom by atom, the implications for medicine, manufacturing, everything really are just massive.
And this is where their insight gets really interesting. They recognize that all these technologies weren't developing in isolation. They were all feeding off each other, accelerating each other's growth, like a chain reaction of innovation.
So it's not just that each individual field was advancing exponentially, but that they were all working together, amplifying each other, pushing us closer and closer to this point of no return, this singularity.
Precisely. And that's why the singularity is such a compelling, albeit daunting, concept to grapple with. It's not just one invention, one discovery. It's this convergence of countless threads of progress, all weaving together to create this tapestry of change so intricate and fast-paced that it challenges our very understanding of what it means to be human in a world on the brink of, well, everything.
Okay, I'm officially having a future shock moment over here. So they've laid out this vision of the future, the singularity event, but what did they think it actually meant? Did they try to describe the indescribable?
They did, and they used a brilliant analogy to do it. They compared the singularity to an event horizon, like the point of no return around a black hole.
Ooh, okay, now you've really got my attention. Tell me more. We're back, and I gotta admit that event horizon analogy has me a little freaked out. It's like we can see the general direction things are headed, but beyond a certain point, all bets are off.
Exactly. Like trying to sail a ship in a hurricane.
Right.
You can have the best charts, the most experienced crew,
Yeah.
but eventually you're just along for the ride.
You're just holding on.
Exactly.
Yep.
That's the singularity as they saw it.
Yeah.
This point where predicting the specifics just becomes impossible.
So given that they couldn't predict the specifics beyond this event horizon, what kind of questions were they grappling with? Did they even try to imagine what a post-singularity world might look like?
They did, and it's actually pretty insightful.
Okay.
They focused on three big questions.
Okay.
First was plausibility.
Okay.
Basically, given everything we know about exponential growth, how likely is it that the singularity will actually happen? Is it a question of when, not if? Or are there factors that could throw us off course?
It's like they were taking their own predictions seriously, but also acknowledging that, hey, the future is a slippery fish to catch.
For sure.
What were the other big questions on their minds?
Next up, and maybe the most important one, desirability.
Okay.
Assuming the singularity does happen,
Yeah.
is that a future we should even want?
Why?
Is all this supercharged progress ultimately going to be a good thing for humanity?
Right.
Remember, this was the 90s.
Yeah.
Fears about things like AI turning against us or nanotech going haywire were already starting to bubble up.
For sure, it's easy to get caught up in the ooh shiny aspect of new technology, but it's important to remember that every invention comes with a trade-off.
Totally.
So what was their take? Were they optimistic about this future they were predicting?
I'd say they were cautiously optimistic.
Okay.
They recognized the potential dangers, but ultimately landed on the side of embracing this future, even accelerating it.
Wow.
And their reasoning was fascinating. Mm-hmm. They saw knowledge creation and sharing as the key.
So instead of trying to hit the brakes on progress, they wanted to hit the gas, but with better steering.
Exactly.
I like it.
They believed that by fostering a culture of learning, encouraging innovation, and openly sharing ideas, we could potentially steer the singularity in a positive direction.
It's like that old saying, knowledge is power. But in this case, it's not just power. It's the ability to shape our own destiny, even in the face of something as massive as the singularity. Do they have any concrete ideas about how to do that, how to put this acceleration of acceleration into practice?
Funny you should ask, because what we're doing right now, this whole deep dive approach to breaking down complex information and making it accessible, they were all about it.
So they were like the original podcasters, just without the fancy microphones and sound effects.
Pretty much.
Wow.
They believed that making knowledge accessible to everyone, not just the tech elite, was crucial for empowering individuals to become active participants in shaping the future. Because if enough people understand the forces at play, we're less likely to just be swept along by them.
Okay, that's actually pretty inspiring. But let's be honest, not everything in their crystal ball came true. What about their predictions that didn't age so well?
Well, remember those nano assemblers we talked about?
Yeah.
The ones building things atom by atom?
Yeah.
Yeah, that hasn't exactly panned out on the timeline they imagined. Nanotechnology has come a long way for sure.
Right.
But we're not quite assembling our furniture molecule by molecule just yet.
So even the best predictions can miss the mark sometimes.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the point, isn't it?
Right.
It's not about perfect foresight.
Yeah.
It's about
recognizing that the future isn't predetermined.
Right.
It's a choose your own adventure story. And we all have a role in writing the next chapter.
I like that.
This document, even with its misses, reminds us that the most important thing isn't predicting the future, but understanding the forces that shape it and then deciding what we want to do with that knowledge.
This has been quite a journey. From billion transistor chips to artificial brains to the very nature of knowledge itself, we've covered a lot of ground.
We have. And if there's one thing I hope you take away from this deep dive, it's this. Don't be afraid to ask the big questions.
Yeah.
The what ifs and the what nows,
right,
that these futurists were grappling with back in 1997 are even more relevant today.
Totally.
So keep exploring, keep learning, and keep asking those tough questions. Who knows? You might just shape the future in the process.
I love that. It's not about having all the answers, but about having the courage to ask the questions in the first place. Thanks for joining us for this mind-bending trip back to the future. And until next time, keep those brains buzzing.